Christian Espinoza is the founder and CEO of Blue Goat Cyber, helping medical device teams navigate FDA cybersecurity compliance quickly and clearly. A U.S. Air Force veteran and certified ethical hacker with 30-plus years in cybersecurity, he brings a practical, risk-based approach to securing life-critical devices and supporting successful FDA submissions. So when you first started out your early days, I guess I would go all the way back to high school. What kind of kid were you, and was hacking a part of your life then?
I don't know if hacking was part of my life. I was a very determined and competitive child. I grew up in a very chaotic environment with a mother who was addicted to pain meds and other things. So it was a lot of chaos. So I had to forge my own way and kind of grow up quickly. And I think that drive to get out of my environment really helped me in my life, actually.
Oh, wow. That's incredible. But as a kid, did you have a passion for white hat, I guess we'd call it, white hat hacking or even computers?
I had a passion for figuring things out, very curious. So I think that probably contributed to hacking. And then when I was in the military, I started looking at what I wanted to do after that. And for some reason, maybe I watched a hacker movie or something, hacking kind of became something I was interested in. But I certainly took things apart and built things and did all the work on my own car back in high school. So I guess I did have, you know, a passion for it back then, but there was no real computers back in when I was a child. It was in the early 70s.
Yeah. So what did you study in college?
I majored in electrical engineering.
Very interesting. So how did you get started in cybersecurity, and where did that passion come from?
I went to the Air Force Academy, and my desire was to fly jets, fighter jets, but they cut all the pilot slots. So my second career choice was communications. So I did communications in the military. And part of what I did was maintain secret networks to keep our adversaries from getting our secrets. So I did what they called information assurance back then. It was basically cybersecurity for the military. And then when I transitioned out of the military, I just leveraged that experience to start doing more cybersecurity, and then got into hacking and penetration testing, as they call it, trying to know, break in environments physically and logically and technically.
Yeah, it's such a fascinating field. And security was always one of the most important things that a company should focus on, but it's become more paramount and essential as we head into decentralized structures, even for like blockchain, for example. When someone's bank account got compromised, there was a central authority we can go to for recourse. Mm-hmm. And we're in a world now where we're moving away from these centralized structures to some capacity where there is no recourse. So the first line of attack, and it's a preemptive measure. There are no reactive processes after. And so I think you're in like a really amazing field. And I always wonder where people like yourself who are just super analytical, are extremely good at what they do. Sometimes a system is only as good as its weakest component. Mm-hmm. And you can have $1 billion infrastructure up, but you can have also someone who's just a bit of a social engineer, and he knows how to call into the office and pretend he's working with the UPS guy who came in earlier and he needs some code from behind this box. And before you know it, you've kind of let them right through the front door. How does this kind of play into your security mentality? And is this an issue where even if we become 10 times more protective online technically, we still have humans kind of at the front line?
I think that, like you said, that's the weakest link, the human component to security. When my company has done penetration testing, which is ethical hacking, trying to break into an environment, if we are allowed to use what we call social engineering, trying to con somebody or trick somebody, a person, we're 100% successful. If we're not allowed to use that, our success rate is still pretty high, but it's not 100%. But like you said, if we can call somebody, send the email, pretend we're a delivery person, tailgate into a building, where we always get full access to everything. So that is the biggest problem to solve, and I'm not sure it's one that can be solved.
Wow, that's a very interesting response. And we'll talk about Blue Goat Cyber in just a moment, because I'm so curious. Still at the macro perspective for just a moment, we're heading into a world where AI is really kind of taken off to some extent. I'm sure you're familiar with this expression of rattling your doorknob. So you can have a server up. No one particularly is focused on hacking your server, but they're just pinging servers across an IP range. It's kind of like some guy checking doors in a parking lot for someone who forgot to lock their door, mm-hmm. and then they go in. That's been the case for the longest time. But where AI starts to play a little more of a concern for me is not people just checking your front door and rattling your doorknob. You're going to have these ninjas that can climb 20-story buildings and check every single window for an opening. Think of having like super, super smart people working full time. And how is this kind of back and forth and cat and mouse game going to go with AI just getting exponentially more intelligent?
I think the odds are going to increase that we're going to be hacked, basically, because it is a cat and mouse game. And the challenge is the cyber criminals, and especially if they're using AI, they just have to find one open door. And we have to make sure, if I'm a big corporate network, all 10,000 doors are closed. If one of them is open for, you know, just a minute, that's a way somebody can get into the environment.
Right.
And I think with AI and workflows from an attack perspective, combining that with social engineering, because AI can help with that as well, I think the chances of cyber criminals getting in is only going to increase.
Wow. Okay. Tell me about Blue Goat Security, Blue Goat Cyber. First of all, where did the name come from? I'm really curious.
I climb mountains. I've climbed two of the seven summits. When I climb mountains, I always see goats. They're always high up in altitude, trying to get to the next level. They always are on these very like precarious cliffs. They're very agile, very persistent, always trying to get to the next level. And when I'm in the mountains, I like the way the blue sky looks against the snow. It's very calming to me. So I thought those were good qualities for a company.
Great. That's super. That's a great answer. So okay. So tell me what inspired you to specifically start your company and what your uniqueness factor is, as in what separates you from other cybersecurity companies?
What inspired me to start Blue Goat Cyber was a medical incident. After recovering from that, I've been training for Ironman triathlons. I've done 24 of them in my life, and I was training for one, and I had literally done like 150 burpees. And then behind my left knee, my leg started hurting. I thought I pulled a muscle, but a friend of mine told me to go to the hospital, and she said I might have blood clots. I'm like, whatever. Like, people like me don't get blood clots. So I went to the hospital anyway. I promised her I'd go, and I was diagnosed with 6 blood clots in my left leg. And I didn't know anything about blood clots, so I asked the doctor what it meant. He said it meant I could die or have a stroke at any moment. So I was kind of freaking out about it. And when I eventually recovered from the blood clots and decided to reclaim my health, because basically they told me I couldn't run, I couldn't travel, I couldn't, you know, train for Ironman, I couldn't do anything that I used to do. I couldn't hike, couldn't climb a mountain. So I, after a bit of depression and deciding to reclaim my health, I decided I'm going to get every blood test done, get another Doppler ultrasound done, and stop taking blood thinners and just live my life on my terms. That decision gave me the confidence to form a new company. And I thought that if it wasn't for that medical device, I wouldn't be here. Like if that device was hacked or recalled, I wouldn't be alive. So I thought maybe this is the universe telling me to start a company and focus on medical device cybersecurity and also leverage the experience I had in my first company that I sold where we did medical device cybersecurity, but it wasn't our pure focus.
Very interesting. Can you tell me more about medical device security?
Yeah, we make sure a hacker, either intentionally or unintentionally, like malicious software or ransomware, can't get into a medical device. And this could be something like a drug infusion pump. A drug infusion pump controls the flow rate of some drug to your body intravenously, and many of those have been compromised where an attacker could increase the flow rate. So if you're on a drug like morphine and the flow rate goes from 10% to 100%, you can cause someone to OD. Even implantables like pacemakers, defibrillators, those things have wireless connectivity. It's a way an attacker can get into a defibrillator and potentially shock you to death. That's why Dick Cheney had his wireless capability of his defibrillator disabled, because there's a legitimate threat somebody could hack into it.
Wow.
And it's even getting worse. You talked about AI. The threat's getting bigger because now we have surgical robots that are migrating towards autonomous surgical robots that are using AI. And imagine if a surgical robot is performing surgery on your spine and it has a cyber attack against it, right? You could paralyze somebody or even kill somebody.
Yeah, even more so, we're heading to the world of cyborgism where certain organs are being replaced electronically. Mm-hmm. And having those compromised as well can obviously be an issue. And I imagine the kind of people you're fending off are radically different than the kind of people your average person would associate as like a bad actor. Like, this isn't a case of like some guy in his basement trying to make a few bucks. This sounds like more of like the ecosystem of governments. I would ask, like, who are the exact kinds of people? And are they very different than your typical hacker who's trying to break into your computer?
I would say the majority, probably 90%+, are the typical cyber criminals that make money from ransomware. And a medical device that's on a hospital environment, if it has a vulnerability, it can get ransomware. So they make that money that way. That's like a non-directed attack, I like to call it.
Wow. And they'll say, like, we'll kill people in the hospital, you know, God forbid, if you don't pay us or something, and we'll make all your equipment run amok.
Well, there was a case in the UK middle of last year where a blood establishment center that is able to process blood so people can get a transfusion, they had ransomware and they weren't able to process blood, and several patients died because they couldn't get a transfusion and couldn't get blood that they needed. So I don't think the ransomware was intentionally to kill people, but it did kill people. And if I were the cyber criminal, if my ransomware can actually cause people to die, I can demand more money and probably get it paid out quicker, I imagine.
Wow. It's not an aspect of cybersecurity that I've ever thought about, and probably for the wrong reasons. I mean, it sounds like it's an industry that's only going to continue growing as we have more and more dependence on electronics to keep us afloat. What kind of clients do you generally attract? Is it hospitals or medical companies?
Our clients are primarily like 90% medical device manufacturers, the manufacturer of the medical device itself, that then sells it to the hospital or healthcare delivery organization. And the reason they come to us is because it's now mandated that we do something about cybersecurity with a medical device. The FDA in the United States has to clear, which is basically approving, a device manufacturer's product. And they have to provide, we have to prove that it's cyber secure and all these other things for it to get cleared to be sold in the United States. Otherwise, it's with cybersecurity, nobody really cares about it unless it's mandated. And now it's mandated because of some of the problems we talked about a little bit. Medical devices are becoming more and more dangerous and more connected and interconnected. So we need to have a high degree of cybersecurity performed on them properly.
Right. I can only imagine that the architecture of these devices are built around the philosophy of being simplistic. Because when these devices are meant to do very primitive functions, and I imagine the firmware is not something you constantly need to update. And I imagine when these things were designed 20, 30, 40 years ago, security wasn't really at the forefront of their concerns. Is this the case in the industry where you're worrying about structures? And also, I imagine the duality here, you want these instruments to be extremely simplistic in order for it to function reliably for its actual use case medically. But then the whole security aspect is now building layers, which can make the device itself be a little more complex. Is there like this duality here where security kind of starts adding layers to something that's supposed to behave very primitively?
It can. The devices we typically see are fairly complex. There are devices that we call it software as a medical device. That is some device that runs in a cloud instance. It has AI, as an example, can take an ultrasound image and do image enhancement using the AI for specific diagnosis. So it can help a physician make that diagnosis. So some of these devices are getting more and more complicated. They're not as primitive as they once were. And the other challenge is they have to be updated in the field once they're fielded as well, because they are very vulnerable. And as you know, new risks come out every day and new threats come out every day.
Yeah. I imagine there are some security protocols for medical devices, some standard protocols that you probably help achieve. Can you tell me more about that?
I'm not sure there's really security protocols other than the standard ones like TLS 1.3 or, you know, encryption. From a protocol perspective, what we look at, if this is the protocol you're referring to, is it's required that a device is designed with security in mind. So we look at it from design to disposal. The problem in our industry is people kind of forget about cybersecurity and try to bolt it on after the product is already developed. So it wasn't designed into the product. So the proper methodology that we are trying to raise the awareness on is a secure product development framework, or DevSecOps, like people like to say. We add security into our development as part of our development process. Cybersecurity is part of that.
Right. So tell me a little bit more about FDA. From what I'm reading is that you help companies reach that benchmark.
Yeah, the FDA had some guidance middle of 2023. It was draft. They finalized it 2025, middle of 2025 for cybersecurity. So now if a medical device manufacturer wants to get their device cleared or proved to be on the market, in the United States, they have to go through the FDA. The FDA looks at things like biocompatibility studies, sterility, animal studies, depends on the product. And they also look at cybersecurity now. So they want to basically have proof that you designed your product with cybersecurity in it. You had a penetration test done against it. You had your source code looked at. You've got a software bill of materials. You have a plan that once you fill the device, that you can update it or recall it if it needs to, that you've actually thought about security from design to disposal. That's what the FDA is looking for. And right. If they don't see that, or the artifacts that support that, they will reject your submission and you have 180 days to fix it, or they'll just reject it again. So it's, you know, it's a very scrutinizing process now. Which is
right.
Good.
So I see that in the description, it says FDA approval, but there's a big difference between being FDA approved and FDA cleared. You're dealing with FDA clearing, and there's now a cybersecurity aspect, which I found very interesting. Is there like some sort of standard protocols, like the baseline stuff that companies need to, or that products need to meet in order for them to be considered cyber safe?
There are a number of things that are required, like static application security testing, penetration testing, fuzz testing, dynamic application security testing. So there's like a number of, from a protocol of what needs to be tested and looked at, there's a long list of things that have to be assessed, some of it by a third party. Some of it you have to provide the documentation and the evidence that you're using the right encryption, using the right cloud instance, and it's set up properly. You have the right controls on Bluetooth, you know, so there's a lot of different factors. It just depends on the device, because a lot of devices have Bluetooth, some sort of cloud component in the cloud, maybe a mobile application. So we have to have controls around all those aspects.
Interesting. And this is to get FDA cleared, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Interesting. What are some of the biggest hurdles that you're experiencing in terms of the industry and challenges and concerns you have moving forward?
The biggest hurdle I see in the industry is really a lack of awareness. A lot of med tech innovators simply don't know about cybersecurity, and the industry is still relatively new with cybersecurity. As I mentioned, the draft guidance came out in 2023, and the final guidance just came out in 2025. So we're really like 3 years into, not even quite 3 years, but almost 3 years into really having to do things with cybersecurity. And it takes often 8 to 14 years for a product to get on the market. So some of the products that are coming to market now, there was no requirement for cybersecurity when they first started working on them. So they're kind of at a disadvantage. The manufacturers are just now starting, are a little more aware of cybersecurity because part of my company's mission is to raise that awareness. And they've also heard, you know, their colleagues getting rejection notices from the FDA, as an example.
That's
for cybersecurity
so interesting.
Purposes.
Yeah, because back in the day when the IP protocol was assigned, they expected X amount of devices to connect to the internet. And we are like orders of magnitude more. Now your fridge and your car would never like get any funding for cyber concerns 20 years ago on a medical device. People say, like, what's the problem here? No one's talking about it. And this is, again, anything FDA is just a complex, rigorous process. And then having another thing to worry about must be exhausting for some people. But I guess you're there to save the day.
Yeah, we're trying to raise that awareness. It's kind of like before when the FDA started cracking down on like biocompatibility with the device. People had a long learning curve and there was a lot of objections about that. And it's like, now it's cybersecurity. So people are slowly starting to understand the ramifications of cybersecurity. And I think as an industry, from a cybersecurity perspective, the industry has done a horrible job conveying what the actual risks are with cybersecurity. With even in medical devices with investors, they still think it's about data privacy, protecting the data. But it's really about patient safety in medtech. And this is something that is slowly shifting. But, I mean, imagine if you have a defibrillator and someone is wirelessly shocking your death while someone is also stealing your protected health information. Which one would you care about first? Probably someone shocking you to death, right? The other thing you can recover from. So we're slowly starting to see a shift where people are thinking cybersecurity equals patient safety. It's not just about the data anymore.
How has your background as a U.S. Air Force veteran affected your philosophy and how you navigate your work life?
I am very mission-driven. I like to have a mission that I stand behind. And with medical devices, it's a mission that I feel is very compelling. Like I said, a medical device saved my life. I wouldn't be here without one. And I also get to see a lot of really cool and innovative products come to market. I get to help the company bring them to market. And it's devices that really change humanity. And then I also try to organize my team in a manner where we all believe in the mission and we all support the mission as well. And everyone understands why we're doing what we're doing.
Yeah, that's a beautiful answer. And how has your experience working in this nuanced industry over the years given you a sense of wisdom that you carry over into your personal life?
Well, everything I do ultimately is about risk. Every day in this industry, it's about risk. Like, what can we do to reduce the risk that if something goes wrong, it might harm a patient or kill a patient with this device? And what are the controls we can put in place? So my personal life, I do things like F4. I drive F4 cars. I shoot guns. I do very risky things. So I think a common theme in my life is about mitigating risk and making the activity I'm doing, either professionally, like the product we're helping secure, or, you know, driving in a F4 car as fast as I can, making it safe for ultimately the patient. And in my personal things, I'm kind of like the patient. If I wreck the car, I could harm myself, right?
Yeah.
Or if I, you know, shoot the target too close and a bullet bounces back, I could harm myself that way too, right?
Yeah, I guess you're very anticipatory. Like, you'll put yourself in a new environment and you'll say, hey, what can go wrong here? How do I mitigate the potential for even having any risk? Just like as a security person, you walk into a new server, you go, here's my environment. You know, how can someone take advantage of the situation? What can be exploited? What can go wrong? And I guess that mentality carries into like every aspect of your life, the big and the small.
Pretty much, yeah. It's hard to shut off. Yeah. Like if I'm in a restaurant, I look at like the exits, the entry points. Mm-hmm. I have very high situational
awareness. You'll never have
awareness.
Your back towards the front door because there's a threat
coming.
Like my back
you
want to be able to react quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially if I'm with my wife. I want to make sure I want to make sure if there's a situation I can help mitigate that situation. Yeah.
Yeah. I love asking that question because you develop a certain discipline in your work life and it really does shape how you live your personal life, whether you're conscious of it or not. And I always like to pick people's brain and see what they're conscious of, how one thing carries over to another. And yeah, that's an awesome answer. You're just aware all the time. And I'm like that too. Like when I go into a restaurant or something, I always want to be able to see the front door. In case something bad happens, I need to be able to react. And if I'm with someone, I try to sit on the bench closer to the restaurant. So if I'm a little more aware before they are, at least I can perhaps do something. It's all about that split second of being able to react the moment you recognize that threat.
That's even if I'm like in a hotel with my wife, I'll sleep on the side of the bed closest to the door for the same reason, I think.
When you first started this podcast, I said, just cybersecurity is kind of taking the front role here in the digital world. I would say like 10 years ago, being a software engineer in Silicon Valley was the coolest thing. And VCs would throw money at you and saying, hey, you have a startup idea? Here's all the money you need to get started. That well has somewhat run dry. And I think we're seeing like a resurgence in the digital world and with more of a focus on cybersecurity analysts. Now, if someone listening to this is starting their life as curious about cybersecurity, what would be the one piece of advice you'd give to them in order to find success like you have?
Cybersecurity is a very large topic and large industry. I would suggest they figure out exactly what they want to do in cybersecurity and niche down and specialize in that specific thing. Because I constantly hear people saying, I want to start a cybersecurity business or I want to get into cybersecurity. I'm like, what does that actually mean? Do you want to run a security operations center? Do you want to do forensics? Do you want to do penetration testing? Do you want to do audits? You know, there's so many things to do. And all those are distractions. So you need to figure out what's the one thing I want to focus on.
Great advice. All right, Christian, how can people get in touch with you?
Yeah, they can get in touch with me on LinkedIn. It's probably the best way, or bluegoatcyber.com. My information is on there as well.
Yeah. Thank you so much for your time. This was a great conversation.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael.